Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. I am Dan.
I am Sean.
I can speak words very well. This is episode 219 of this here Fine Established podcast. And on this podcast, we have three albums that we will be reviewing. We have Snot with a dollar signs album Ethereal. We have Alt J's album The Dream, evokes a lot of sleep, and Hippocampus's album LP3. We'll be reviewing all three of those albums, as well as hot new singles in your area. We're talking about musical singles, by the way. We'll be reviewing musical singles, no Epstein. All right. I'm really excited to talk about this podcast and talk about the stuff on this podcast with Sean. And how are you doing, by the way?
I'm good. You know, I'm chilling. I'm trying to stay away from bowling alleys, but more on that later.
You're clean shaven a little bit. I noticed that you're a little more, you hadn't shaved for the past couple episodes. And
I was growing it out a little bit, and then I got the fuck over it.
it was a little unusual for you. I know you like to keep it at a nice and crisp.
I know. I had to get that, I had to bring the brush out. Get that.
Yeah. Get that mini little comb, that like finger size comb right there, just for little tiny hairs. Anyways, let's go into these.
I'm using that, but.
Real talk, I have one of those, and it's really like kind of just like comfortable in the same way you'd like rub a cat's head and the cat would just like purr and really kind of like dig it. It's like really like comforting feeling.
Well, you know, no, for sure. Like people who have them, I hate having a beard. So that's my thing, is like I would hate to have one because that means I would have like a full beard.
And totally. There are other places I guess one could use it. This is not a Manscaped ad. Anyways, first up in new singles, we have What Me Worry by Portugal the Man. And I want to give this to you, Sean. What do you think about this?
I like it. I do like Portugal the Man. He's done a bunch. He's very eclectic with his taste. We've done a couple of album reviews and whatnot. But the single I thought was actually pretty good from him. I think it's a return to form in a way, because his last album I had some issues with, and some other things that he's been releasing I haven't particularly super cared for it. But I think What Me Worry is like a really fun one, where it's like a nice upbeat indie track that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I didn't really get too much from the Woodstock release that Portugal the Man did. But overall, I feel like this is a good, similar return to form. It's not as poppy as Feel It Still, and Thankfully, which I like. But it's a good sort of upbeat kick as well, in a way where like it could be poppy. It could be a song that has mainstream appeal in a good way.
I think it's a great single. I'm very interested to see what he has for a new album, because it's been a minute since we've had any release from him, so.
I am too. Next, we have Diet Coke by Pusha T. And my top line thoughts are that it is best when Kanye, or Ye, shuts up and produces, because I love the production on this track. It complements Pusha T's raps very well. Pusha T's killing the game right now. And I'm really happy about this. Look at me, saddle up. I'm still pitching, baby, batter up. Imaginary players ain't been coached right. Master recipes under stove lights. The number on his jersey is the quote price. You order Diet Coke, that's a joke, right? All you niggas get it off the boat, right? But only I can really have a snow fight. Detroit nigga challenge, what's your dope like? If your bin's bigger, step it up. I absolutely love Diet Coke. I really, really like it. Ye needs to shut the fuck up. More on that later. Stick to producing, because this is fantastic. I really like this. Like the flow, everything, the beats, it's all like it's great. Especially in a world of overbearing trap and whatnot, it's fantastic. And Pusha T still sounds, you know, relevant and doesn't sound any drowned out by it at all. He sounds good. Lyrics are good too. So yeah, great track. Yeah, definitely. A couple of several newer artists on the block we have, double released by Nux, Alpha House, and Hide and Seek out of England. And this is a pretty interesting track that I've sort of seen, came across on YouTube actually, the kind of double project for this. And it's really kind of classic, sort of a little bit grimy influenced English rap. They call police, ain't no drill when the feds all sweet. The pain don't kill, we just get more fiends. We play our role, let them boys play theirs, but don't play fair. Like, oh, say swear and holding cells, trying to hold in fear. I scream, fuck you, and I hope they hear. Yeah, every day is like hide and seek. If I lock down 2 in the morning, tell me by night why I see 3. Dotting them, crossing the I's and T's. I know you couldn't hide from me most of your lives, and it's fine by me. If you do time for the rest of your life, no, it's fine by me. Stuff that I generally enjoy, stuff that I like, because it has a characteristic difference in the English language, but still pushes trap in a little bit of a different route, so to speak, a different veering off the road, so to speak, in a good way. I like something that goes off the beaten path, because trap gets so repetitive in music that we review, and I've talked about that a lot this year, that it is nice to see things or hear things that sound a little bit different. And you have Alpha House, which is a little bit of a slower, drearier song, then Hide and Seek, which gets a little bit more upbeat into that kind of thing. But these are good starting out tracks, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I know you like your English rap. Sometimes I like it, sometimes I don't. I think this is decent. His accent's super thick on the tracks, so you could definitely hear that. But I think they're fine. I really like the production on them. I think that's a big thing for me on them, especially when it comes to, you know, our grabs with trap and whatnot. But yeah, I did enjoy both as well.
Yeah. And then next you have Baby Blues with Audrey Nuna. And I really like this because this is an Asian woman who is doing like a little bit of an R&B rapping kind of deal. And it flows out really well. The production is kind of like boomy, sort of a little bit spacey in there. It works out really nicely in the track. I was really appreciating this.
I like this a lot. I really want to dive into that whole record. She did release a record with it as well. So I want to go into it. Might have to bring it up later on throughout the year when we have some time. Because right now we have an absurd amount of releases and everything. But it's something that I definitely don't want to skip over, because I like that track a lot. The Baby Blues is fantastic. Again, I like her flow, and I wasn't expecting it when I went going into it. But pleasantly surprised with how it turned out. Good track.
Yeah. She's released a couple of things like last year. She has a deluxe album that just dropped this year as well. So definitely will be someone on my radar.
For sure. Yes.
Yes. Then we have Make It True by Ray Khalil and Shehan. Did I get that right?
Yes. Yeah. Ray Khalil is an artist out of LA. She's currently on tour right now doing a bunch of stuff, but she released an album, I like to say, 2 years ago or a year ago. And she's more known for like her rap, spoken word, and a bunch of other different styles compared to the single. And this single is very different from what she normally does. And I absolutely love it.
Stop. Why do we keep on fighting? We should try to mend it as we go. Why do we keep on fighting? We should try to mend it as we go. The future's bright, my baby. I think that we should take it slow. The future's bright, my baby. No. I think we should take it slow. Why do we keep on fighting? We should try to mend it as we go. Yeah.
Really, really like the production of it. It's, you know, that mix of, you know, neo-pop and funk, along with even some like alternative flows and whatnot, and the vocals are fantastic.
Yeah, the guitar in there in the beginning is really fun.
Yeah, it's such a cool track. It's something that I think like if more and more people can get to it, they get to something that can blow up. It's such a unique sound in that way that I absolutely love. Also, a friend of the show, Tyra, that is her daughter. So, you know, shout out Tyra for letting me know about her single, because I absolutely adore the single a lot.
That's what's up. Yeah, there's reach out to us as people if you have singles to recommend. We've been doing more of those recently, and we definitely appreciate those coming. Definitely also reach out to us at audioface@syndicate23.co. That is the email address that we have that we can take in single suggestions, and the single rule still applies. We'll review one single, then we'll wait for your proper like release, whether it be a drop or an EP or whatever, to go through the full thing. But we definitely want to hear people's singles. There's a ton being released all the time. A lot of it has to fight algorithms and release schedules and all these other different things. So we want to promote what we can here. We can't do everything with this little podcast, but you know, we try.
Yeah. And then, and speaking of those, the single rules, Raycla will be coming out with an album in, I think, 2 months or so, which we're definitely going to review.
We'll definitely be excited to check that out. I love that. Yes. I was really not expecting the way the song turned out from the first 20 seconds.
Exactly,
I love that
right?
surprise. Yeah.
Give me more of that.
Yes. And lastly, for new singles this week, we have Mona Lisa by Mixumtune. Mixumtune. Did we ever decide on that pronunciation?
Momtune, who knows? You know, indie artist that we both really, really enjoy. We have reviewed a bunch of her work throughout our podcast, and this I really like this track a lot. I think it's a cool sound. It's nice to hear her kind of evolve and, you know, continue to push her sound further and further. The biggest thing for me, though, is the lyricism in this track. Like, there's so many different hidden meanings. There's so many different little things, you know, playing on life, art, and a bunch of other stuff that she combines it together that it makes it unique and really cool if you look throughout the lyrics. So I like that. There's a lot of different hidden things in there.
Stories for somebody else. Think that I'm ready to start a new chapter. I've been looking for some way to turn it around. Looking for someone to give me the crown. I wanna feel like I finally matter. I wanna be a Mona Lisa.
But I really enjoy.
There was one lyric that I just can't pull up like fast enough that was really playing with like multiple meanings of the word,
yes.
Of like different words that I thought was just super clever. Maybe I'll get to it, but it was like not wanting to be someone's like book on the shelf, but being ready to start a new chapter, sort of speak.
Yeah.
That was a really good one. Yeah, where it's like you don't want to be like, just a part of someone's life. You want to be like take a more active role and active place in that. But just that metaphor mixing, the way the song kind of goes through. I mean, we've talked about her being one of the like people to watch in indie, especially, 100%. And this just continues that.
Yeah, it is. Very, very impressed with everything that she comes out with. And this might be one of my favorite things that she's actually made. So yeah, keep it coming. We will review. I think she has a LP coming out later this year, so we would definitely review that as well.
Definitely. And so with that singles, I think we'd have a wonderful singles block, a nice variety of different artists, different genres, different things going on here. We want to let you know that
singles in your area.
Yes, we want to let you know that we actually have our 2022 playlist. It has not really been named. It's called Untitled 2022 AF Playlist. Because that's how I titled it in my phone when we started this year. And so if you have name suggestions, send them out. I'll probably like post some stuff about it. We want your suggestions. Maybe we'll come up with one ourselves. I don't know. It'll be one of those organic things we do for our audience, for our people that we love very much. Speaking of ways y'all can show us love, make sure you add that playlist to your Spotify if you still have that. Like it or whatever, share it. We'll definitely look into other ways to do it. It's very hard to like maintain multiple different playlists on multiple different streaming services. So like if we had an Apple Music one, we don't use Apple Music, but then to make one, that's like a big thing. But if people really want us to do that, we might consider doing that. And something that helps it make us easier to do those kinds of things if we have members to help us get that infrastructure to be able to support what we do. So go to join.syndicate23.co to become a member. You get bonus content from Audioface and from Power Report. There's a lot of stuff on Power Report that I'll talk about a little bit more in another ad block here. But make sure you're supporting Audioface in all the ways that you are able to. And even if that's a free way, that means following Audioface on Twitter at twitter.com/audiofacepod and Instagram at instagram.com/audiofacepod or on YouTube at youtube.com/audiofacepod, where you just passed the big 200 subscribers. Hey, look at that. Thank you all for doing that. Please keep telling people about the YouTube channel and helping it grow. We have almost all of the Audio Face Award 2021 clips that will be published on YouTube are going to be published. The rest, you have to be a Syndicate 23 member for. So make sure you check that out. We're going to be putting even more music content up. I think next week on Audio Face, we'll do a bonus episode for members where we review more music. I think Beach House's Once Twice Melody we're going to do for members first. So that's a big project. It's a really cool project. Man, we love Beach House.
Ooh, man, that's a lot of music.
Yeah. So you'll definitely want to check that out. And lastly, before we get into the regular part of the show, thank you, Peter, so much for mastering all this content that we're putting out here. DeadMusic666 on Insta, and especially notable for artists, because I talk about this on PowerPort as well. Give Peter a plug. But for artists and musicians who may be listening or people who know musicians, Dead Music Productions helps with mastering artists and recording artists as well. So if that's something you're into, reach out to them at DeadMusic666 on Instagram, and they can hook you up. They're recording and mastering music for artists as we speak right now, and we might be talking to a few soon. You know, more on that later.
Yes.
Anyways,
please.
So we have a story with DaBaby, and he went on a little bit of a bowling escapade, so to speak. And so,
he went a little. There will be blood.
Oh, there was a lot of blood. There's quite a bit of blood. And so, where this kind of started is that DaBaby has a baby with Dani Leigh, who is a former girlfriend of his. And that's like largely the gist of it. But Dani Leigh has a brother, and Dani Leigh and DaBaby haven't been doing very well. I think there was a previous like argument that went on over their baby, which makes this so confusing. And so Dani Leigh's brother is all like, okay, he's trying to stand up for his sister and stuff like that, saying that, listen, whenever I see DaBaby, it's on site or whatever. Fast forward to this past week at a bowling alley in the Los Angeles County area, which will contribute to the arbitrary scale this week on Audio Face. And it turns out that on site meant on site, but Dani Leigh's brother got a little bit more than what he asked for, because DaBaby and his crew, more or less, came at him and started fighting, like, on the lanes.
Damn. Like, straight up, like, slipping and sliding, pulling hair. Be just, oh, I love it.
Yeah. I hadn't seen that much hair pulling from DaBaby since. Anyway, so the footage is, stems from an incident that occurred at this LA bowling alley. And there's a bunch of different angles. You see Brandon Bills, who is Dani Leigh's brother, basically held by the hair, being dragged by one of DaBaby's crew. And you gotta remember, DaBaby is like a violent guy. And a number of different connotations.
You don't want to understate that.
Yeah, a number of different connotations of that notwithstanding. I think he's on some sort of probation right now, so he can't be seen getting too involved in stuff like this. It's definitely like a danger for his career at this point. So he's got that concern that I think he needs to make sure he's considering. But just also the fact that you're getting into these lame, petty, ignorant ass like fights at bowling alleys in public over baby mama drama, essentially, over like respect kind of deals. Like, oh, I don't feel respected enough. You disrespected me by saying you would come after me in this thing. So now like my crew's going to come to you. And you have people like, I don't know how much I should read in the comments or whatever, but you have people going, well, yeah, DaBaby did what he had to do. Like they're defending DaBaby for this behavior. And this is so divorced even from the, like, my other joke notwithstanding earlier, this is so divorced from DaBaby's big scandal of him being quote unquote canceled for talking about gay issues or whatever. Like, the point we were making at the time was that Dave Chappelle has this whole history of just being a violent piece of work for a long period of time, predating any of like anti-LGBTQ stuff, which is very bad. And he should be called out for. But there's a whole more larger issue with DaBaby that more people should be critical of.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure he is on some type of charges and stuff that we've talked about before in the podcast. And he has had a history of that before. But, like, the brawl is brutal. He's just literally trying to rip the dude's hair out. Like, it's just awful. That guy's a real piece of shit. So that is not a guy you want to be defending. That's not a guy you want to be on your side, or you want to be on the side of in support of him. Absolutely not. We've already had all the instances of last year and whatnot, and he's just a tried and true piece of shit person. It's pretty simple at the end of the day.
Yeah. Law enforcement sources, according to TMZ, so take that what you will, it's confirmed that the police are now investigating DaBaby for assault with a deadly weapon because the Bills was kicked in the head while he was on the ground by DaBaby. And so that would be a major violation. And at the end of the day, Danny Lay is just like, look, this is a bad situation for our daughter that we're trying to raise. Yeah. I don't have a ton of sympathy for Danny Lay because, like, you know who DaBaby was. You thought this was all super cool when you were dating him and you had his baby, but like, this is kind of the bed you made as well. That being said, DaBaby needs to shape up his behavior because this isn't good for him. This isn't good for his family. This isn't good for his fans, even though his fans eat this up. So he literally had a freestyle video that kind of felt rehearsed, honestly, that he did in the same jacket that he had the bowling alley brawl in. It was unclear whether the video was taken before or afterwards, but it's just like, either way, it's not a good look.
Yeah, it's not a good look at all. He's just, you don't want to put that guy on a pedestal.
Yes. Moving on, we had a interesting week in music news in the sense that we had a lot of major sex tapes release of rappers, and it was unclear like what the angle was. These were different hacks, these were different circumstances. A lot of these weren't even hacks, so we decided to, in typical Audioface fashion, create a block of, because this is the first minute of the video, I guess I have to be a little bit careful with how I word this, a block of male members content, if you will. So
male members content that may have to do with the word chicken in a different language.
Yes. Chicken fighting.
Chicken fighting. There we go. Chicken fighting.
Yes. The chicken block, if you will. Anyway, so the biggest story out of all of these, of course, is that Isaiah Rashad had a sex tape that leaked online on just this past Wednesday, where there was footage of Isaiah Rashad with a bunch of men, and Isaiah Rashad was both giving and receiving oral stimulation, so to speak.
Yes.
There were no women involved in this, which would seem to suggest Isaiah Rashad's sexuality as being gay. This is something that he hasn't really talked about in any sort of context publicly before. All of his rap songs seem to be the standard, typical sort of, trapping girls, all this sort of whatever shit. Usually. On Audioface podcast, we don't care about people's sexuality. We often celebrate artists. I mean, generally speaking, we're reviewing the music first and foremost, right? And then the artist identities naturally are oftentimes part of that music, and sometimes not part of that music. And we'll celebrate artists who are good, who are falling to these identities, and tear apart artists who are bad, who are part of these identities, not because of their identities, but because of their quality as an artist or not. But we don't care and actually try to support artists of marginalized communities and speak for them and support them on Audioface podcast. So the fact that Isaiah Rashad may be gay or on par of the LGBTQ spectrum, we don't really care about. And hip hop history, as we talked about in the Lil Nas X situation, as we talked about in the DaBaby situation from last year, has a long history of being really bigoted and homophobic towards the idea of a gay rapper. And so this is different, though, in the year 2022. Obviously, things have changed. And so you had a number of people who were kind of, making fun of him, laughing at him, which is sort of typical middle school nonsense. But you had a lot of people who said that they were, it's random. They don't care. But I don't get why people are so interested in what he does behind closed doors. That's even weirder. And yeah, I think it's really interesting. I don't know. I've talked a lot. What do you want to go into this with, Sean?
Yeah, it's just funny how, throughout the week, you had four people with instances that were leaked online. I'll just say that much. And it's not a good look on any of them, really. Everybody's like, ugh. That's kind of the thing where everybody's like, I don't really want to see that. That's something that we don't want to see. And some people are clowning on them or whatnot. But we won't make fun of anybody's sexuality here or there. But we will make fun of you if you post stuff about you ejaculating yourself like Lil Fizz did. So this is my favorite one.
Oh, wait. I before we get to like skipping all these, I think the Isaiah Rashad one is like the one that's you could talk about the most. The rest are like, okay, these are just kind of dumb instances. But like with Isaiah Rashad, there's been a history of him talking about his relation, like his struggles with addiction. Like how the other artists at Top Dog Entertainment would call him Bobby Brown because of how bad he was with drugs. And so he'd be in the recording studio, like passed out or whatever, and they'd be talking about him and they call him Bobby Brown. So at one point he was saying, instead of just explaining myself, I just thought that people knew about my drug habits, whatever, or I'd be drunk spazzing and nobody hears about that. They just hear that you're drunk or whatever. But hearing that he was called Bobby Brown would hurt his feelings. And so, you know, in the context of rappers and artists in general who have drug and addiction issues and are going through that stuff, who have the public and media attention, like they just don't handle it well, which is hard to handle well because it's all crazy and a lot of times it's just going against you, even when you're trying to do things all right. Like I hope that Isaiah Rashad has like a good support system, is able to take care of himself in this situation, because this is the kind of stuff that is like a really like dangerous moment mentally for a lot of artists.
Yeah, and a lot of artists don't make out the other side. You know, it's like the people who had their iClouds leak or whatnot in the big leak. This is what, maybe 10 years ago or something like that. You know, when that happened too, you had a lot of people that were outed or this or that, and they don't necessarily want to be, or had a lot of things like mental health issues because of these things that were private or whatever. So I feel bad for him in that way. So I hope people get off his back on that.
It's a huge invasion of privacy. I hope that people 100%. Are okay with this. The other cases though are a little bit different.
Are hilarious. So
Nelly accidentally posted a story, an Instagram story, almost minute long clip of a woman going down on him. So there's a lot of oral sex in this cock block here. I can finally say that. And so there,
Jesus.
Nelly has 3.3 million Instagram followers. The video was deleted fairly quickly, but you have a full view of the woman's face and some guy's dick. And so, you know, Twitter had a lot of opinions. Some were like, oh, some were like, ah, and others were, one user wrote, now we know why Ashanti never cares after the breakup. There was no dick to be missed. Oh, God. Welcome to No Chill Island.
Jesus.
And, yeah, a lot of people were surprised to see why Nelly was trending and why Nelly was moaning so much. But Nelly was, hey, God bless America, all right? So Nelly was in, Nelly apologized and said, you know, this is disrespectful to the woman involved in question. I didn't mean to like post this as an accident or whatever.
You know how many parameters you got to do to post an Instagram story?
Yeah, like, it's actually too hard to post an Instagram story. A lot of my Instagram stories just don't post properly. So like you almost have to like fight with Meta, the company, in order to get the stories to post. Next up in the Mushroom Kingdom, we have Lil Fizz, who
it's my favorite one.
Yeah, he had a video of himself leaked where he was
engorging himself and himself.
Yes, he was indulging himself. And indulging himself until climax. I don't know why he has an OnlyFans account, honestly. I guess this is what you pay for. But it leaked online. And so that's one of my more philosophical questions. If you post it to OnlyFans and someone like downloads it from OnlyFans, then just posts it somewhere else online, is that a leak? Like, that's almost like saying, I guess it's the same. It's a leak in the same way a song is leaked, right?
I guess, Maybe? I don't know.
No. It's a difference between a leak and a rip.
Yeah. That's for sure.
I think that's what we're trying to parse here. This is very important scientific conversation happening on this podcast. And
the
lastly,
legal definitions.
we're all about our legal definition. We're all about our legal definitions here on AudioFace. And so, speaking of, actually having nothing related to do with that, but we have Oxlade, who is a Nigerian musician, who is not only the fourth artist who have a sex tape released this week, but the third Nigerian celebrity to have a sex tape leak in the past 3 months. So it's a little bit unclear how Oxlade's photos leaked on Snapchat, but it essentially is a full-out sex tape having sex with an unknown lady, and it was uploaded to his Snapchat stories. It's unclear whether it leaked or was pulled away or something like that, but fellas, no, there's no need to record it. Just live
when,
in the moment.
When dicks are out, phones should be away.
Yeah, it's like a comedy
new rule.
Club.
The new rule, exactly. Dicks out, phones are away.
No one likes that person at the concert who's recording the whole thing as opposed to supporting. The sound's not going to be good. Listen, the sound's
it
not going to be good.
You know,
it's never going to be
the same as doing it in as being there in person, living in the moment. You know, the quality is never as good.
Yeah, the lighting, just come on.
Moving on, please, God.
Trust me, we're production professionals.
Hey, man.
Anyways, that was, if you want more fine AudioFace content like that, you follow Sean on Twitter.
No, please don't. I'm going to make a home. I'm going to just delete all my shit.
Ruining your Valentine's Day.
Right.
Okay, please, anyways. Don't. So, we just wrapped up Super Bowl weekend, and Ice-T began the Super Bowl weekend festivities with, but by tweeting, not a threat, just a warning. Young rappers coming to LA for the Super Bowl weekend. LA has over 50,000 active gang members. Make sure you play it safe. It's the Wild Wild West. And so a lot of people were saying to Ice-T, like, listen, come on, dude. You're so old. Shut up. Stop doing this. This is too much. Stop talking. Whatever. 3 hours later, Kodak Black gets shot outside of a West Hollywood nightclub at Justin Bieber's after party early Saturday morning. Like, it's real out here.
Real out here.
And so Kodak Black was one of four victims.
Jeez.
Kodak Black's 24, wow. Other victims between the ages of 19 and 60 were taken to a local hospital, almost certainly Cedars-Sinai. It was right down the street. And they were treated for non-life-threatening gunshot wounds. So we're treating this with a little bit of, you know, laughing around, because thankfully no one's dying here. But essentially, you had this major Hollywood after... Jesus Christ! Page 6. Wow, you have all the shit.
Yeah, they got... Man, they got everything. They got
I am not even gonna post that picture. Like, I'm raunchy, Sean. It's, you know, I'm
rough.
Raunchy. I'm not even gonna post that picture on. I'm not even gonna post that picture on the thing. No. Whoa, man.
Hey, man.
I may post the photo of Leonardo DiCaprio just like on the phone, like, hey bro, you won't believe what happened. Oh dang. Yeah, they got
But I could just imagine you posting that in the podcast, just lining up in flames.
Imagine the if AudioFace had Power Report covers. I would just be using nothing but this. Okay, I'm so sorry. This is so bad. But basically, this Page Six article was full of so many bloody photos from the event that I had not even seen on Twitter that I'm actually kind of shocked by. And so I'm not going to be including the link to it. Jokes. Whatever. TMZ, take notes. But anyways, long story short, Justin Bieber had a concert with like Jeff Bezos, Leonardo DiCaprio, and all those different things.
Oh,
it was a
Lord.
Private thing with the Super Bowl show in West Hollywood. Then you had the after party over in West Hollywood, and then all this stuff happened. Hey, this is a warning to LA people, like the Super Bowl, it's a ridiculous time. There's a reason why LA was not allowed a football team for like 2.5 decades.
Yeah. And people don't realize that Inglewood is wild. So people who are actually going to the Super Bowl, have fun.
Yeah, best of luck. Anyways,
best of luck to you.
We move on to Snot's album Ethereal. 35 minutes long, 14 songs long. It's just a fun day. And Snot has been sort of interesting. He has sort of grown a little bit pretty rapidly after having releases. I think his first like album release, Tragedy, was in 2020, but I heard a little bit about him in like 2019-ish or so. Mm-hmm. But each of these albums have sort of like popped up for being like, okay, wow, this is a rapper with some real sort of like panache to him. I've heard some of his previous stuff. It's pretty interesting. And he's gotten quite a lot of listeners and quite a rabid following for, you know, trying things in and out there. And in doing the lead up to doing this review, I did what I try not to do, which is read some music coverage of artists. And apparently there's this thing about having an 808s album, which has nothing to do with the instrument, like 808s as a sound or as a synthesizer instrument. But the 808s album for this generation of rappers is when you, referencing Kanye West's 808s and Heartbreaks record, when you do like an electronic pivot or like shift in your sound to like throw off fans or surprise fans. Now,
what about video game beats?
I'm old enough to remember that people hated 808s and Heartbreak when it came out.
I remember that too.
And it didn't even like, you know, a couple artists here and there say it was influential for them, but compared to other Kanye works over the years, hasn't aged that much better compared to like Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, Graduation. Some people were even coming around to Yeezus more than they are to 808s and Heartbreak. Yep. That being said, all my cards at the table, even though I don't like Kanye West, that 808s and Heartbreak wasn't that bad when it came out.
I thought it was a good album. I don't think it topped Graduation.
Definitely not. It was just a full embrace of like the 808 sound, synthesizers, and auto-tune,
which
made Jay-Z's Death of Auto-Tune, which came out a year later, just super funny. But that was a real Uncle Rap beef. That was a Cold War right there. That'd be a good audio face bonus. The Jay-Z Kanye West Cold War. That's all to say that Ethereal is billed as being like this electronic pivot, but if you get your head out of all of that marketing nonsense, what you get is an album here with a decent amount of features, a mix of songs that are like bangers and songs that do a little bit of experimental trap and B kind of things.
Yes.
Overall, you get a pretty solid trap album in 2022 that I was not expecting to have. I was expecting to kind of crap all over this, but this was pretty decent.
I was expecting to shit all over this, like me too, because, you know, we have a very small
high bar in 2022.
Fuse. Oh, we have a small fuse for bad trap. If it's bad trap, I'm just not going to go into it. And our scale is YB better or YB not better. YB is not even fucking touching this with his ton. Like, this is actually a really, really good album. The first part, the first song, you know, is the intro of My World. And it's like a nice little spoken word piece. It's slow, kind of like just sets the tone for the record. But then the second song, Doja with A$AP Rocky, is just in your face, banner of a trap song. Fucking love this track. Like a lick, lollipop, you get shot, pick your body up and drop. Man, them niggas got me. Them niggas got me. Them niggas got me. Why these niggas talking fucking shit? I told them pipe down, I don't need no little bitch. I fuck that bitch, they throw your cat. Pull up in a scat pack. Windows tinted all black. Bulletproof and all that. Fuck that. Fuck you. Fuck that. Fuck you. Fuck that. On me boots, on me bomber jacket, like was hand and cut. Like, you just hear it and you're like, this goes hard as hell. Yeah. Absolutely love it. I really
Doja Cat, for the record, was like, please don't involve me in this. So she doesn't want to be involved in this. And we also shouldn't make light of this thing rappers do where they just like throw out, oh yeah, I slept with this like artist here, and they're like, no. But nevertheless,
but I'm gonna make fun of alt-right Doja Cat anyways, so you know, whatever.
Yeah. No one's winning in this battle here, but you do with A$AP Rocky get like a banger of a track, and there are some like major bangers here. But then you have tracks like Blue Moon that follow after that, which, not to cut you off, song, but I think you're gonna get into like the variety you get there.
I was going to say that. Yeah. Like with Blue Moon right after, it slows it down and you get into like this, you know, your neo-pop trap and B style. And it's like, whoa.
It's indie. It's straight up indie. I want to go down my mind. I think about all the times what we've been through. And I don't want to waste your time. I thought about that shit last night in the wintertime. I want to go down my mind. I think about all the times what we've been through.
And then you, with those three tracks, right, you have My World, Doja, and Blue Moon featuring Teddy Jones and A$AP Rocky. Those three tracks are all very, very different, but they still go together. They're still cohesive, which is honestly very difficult to do within the genre. Like you can make it, you can do all these different sounds, but a lot of people, when they do that, they make the record about 18 hours long, and it's like it just gets washed out. But within this, you know, short frame of 34 minutes, you really get to hear those sounds. And that's the one that really got me, you know, when Teddy Jones came on the part on the feature, that's what got me into this record. I'm like, wow, this is incredible. Because, yeah, that's when it turned into an indie song. It's fantastic. I really, really liked it. Also, all the songs are just under 3 minutes, but it gives you enough to where you can enjoy it, but not, it's not, it's that perfect middle ground where it's not short where you want to go longer, but it's not too long to where it gets drowned out, especially for having so many different sounds. It's great in that mixture because then, example, like after Blue Moon, you have Go, which is, you know, another hard trap song right after, but it has like this really cool chime beat thing in the background where you're trying to like throw in some different electronic sounds and things here and there, but it still fits in the. That's something that I really like.
Yeah. I thought throughout the entire record, like, and you have some pretty thoughtful like features here that you wouldn't usually get. You have Trippy Red, which you get here a lot of times. You have Juicy J and Joey Badass, which mm-hmm. Joey Badass haven't seen in a while. But Kevin Abstract was a pretty interesting feature to pick from. You know, Brockhampton and the people yep. from Brockhampton are going to have a lot more time on their hands now. So
that's very true.
Yeah, I thought that was a good mix. And then the song Fighting Me right under the Joey Badass one, I felt was like a really cool, almost like Tyler, the Creator, Aminé kind of beat, bouncing around thing that. With kind of chimey and fun. I just thought I'd let you know you've been up in my mind. It's just time, Lord, please, can you show me signs? If she fuck with me, if she love with me, if she done with me, can she run with me, can she kill for me, can she die for me? This a broken heart is falling into pieces. In the parking lot, I'm fighting all my demons. I can't take it anymore, I need a weekend. Vacation, posted with the Haitians, and my bitch Asian. Wait, think she blazing. I was really impressed with, not only, again, like you said, with the first three songs, not just the versatility of Snot, but being able to make it a cohesive record, a sound where the songs like play through back to back. You can pull the songs out and go, I like these tracks individually. You can play the record through and go, this, there's art to it, there's quality to it. And it's so, so difficult to find that in trap and rap, a genre where, especially right now, you just see like this mixtape angle of, I'm gonna throw in a bunch of songs together,
yep.
quantity over quality.
Exactly. And the same thing with like a lot of the features too. A lot of features can be phoned in or this or that just to get plays, you know, unless it's 21 Savage. But then you have a lot of people that just come on there and just be like, oh, okay, you know, industry shit, whatever. Within these, everybody in there that's a feature, they fit well, they're cohesive in the project. They sound like they're not just phoning it in. They're having, you know, a distinct reason to hop on those tracks, and they're great. When I was listening to it, some tracks like Go, Doja, Alone, Trippy Red, like, to me, the production of it reminds me a lot of Playboi Carti, but it sounds like if Playboi Carti didn't have the voice of a scratched-up xylophone, then that's what it would sound like. So it's a good way, like, of a really, really hard and cool production, but actual somebody who can really rap and have that. So I'm really impressed with the record.
Yeah, overall, I think this is really good. Perfect timing. Good, a lot of mix. This is one of my... I'll have to listen to it a little bit more to make sure whether or not I, like, you know, elevate it up to like trap album of the year in that category. But I love the cohesion of this. This is definitely running up there.
It was a big surprise. I was not expecting to enjoy it as much as I did.
Yeah. Arbitrary scale this week. We love our arbitrary scales on Audio Face. We do arbitrary scales because we just did a review. We told you that we liked Snot and we were going to like Do not sleep on this kid. This is going to like be one of the top rappers in the game if he keeps this up, all right? That was our review. If we put a letter to that or a number to that, you would just compare it with some other review and go, oh, why'd you give this number to Star, this number to YB? Is YB actually better? I don't know. For the record, we also do all rank all trap albums this year by saying whether YB is better or YB is not better. Sean, what's your take?
YB definitely not better, but with Bowling
Agreed.
Alleys,
YB not better. Bowling Alleys, yes.
This is good, like Westlake Lanes. It's like a solid, like Westlake Lanes. Like it's a good, like you're gonna have like your bowling leagues in there. You're gonna have your old people bowling leagues. You're gonna have your young people bowling leagues, but you still got an arcade there, and there's like a turn arcade too. So it's got a lot of stuff. It's got like 3 air hockey tables, pool tables, Street Fighter, what, you know, and a whole bunch. And the beer is cheap. That's good.
This is a Java Lanes down in Long Beach. Real ones will remember Java Lanes before
That's
they
a
tore
name
that
I've
shit
heard
down.
A long time, man. Shit.
I had to remember and make sure I like. Is that just like a Berenstain Bears effect that I did in my head, or no? Java Lanes was a real thing. They had like tikis, and it was all 70s style. They had like a pointy ass roof.
You know, there's hella asbestos in that roof.
Oh, extreme. Popcorn ceilings and everything. But hey, it was really easy to get blood off the blood off the lane. So it was a nice, reliable bowling alley. Of course, we're referencing the thing that happened with DaBaby earlier this week. That's just how arbitrary skills tend to work. But moving on, as a reminder, you can help grow Audio Face by following Audio Face on Twitter, Instagram, at Audio Face Pod. Power Report, I did a recent episode. Sean and Bam actually joined me on this episode, where we just kind of did a long spattering of news stories from Russia and Ukraine, whether that's like a war or not, what's going into that not war, actual war, cold war, not war thing. All the details, all the breakdown. We did it in a smart, intelligent way, and I'm really proud of the coverage that we did. Also, I once again chose violence. I once again chose violence against someone I used to work against, and that someone I used to work against, someone I used to work with, is Kyle Kalinske. But he's annoying me very much, and it's Joe Rogan related, and it's I don't love to toot my own horn, even though I have to talk about these things I do all the time. But I think I did a pretty airtight job of this one, and I await.
I'm excited to listen.
I await the responses that. I await the dialogue that hopefully this starts, not for like my own selfish growth reasons, but because I think it's an important conversation that I would like more prominent leftists to be able to start having. Anyways, well, that's PowerPort, the political show, youtube.com/Dan from the internet, or powerreport.world for all of the podcast links. And remember, become a Syndicate 23 member to support all of these different things. Join.syndicate23.co. And so we're moving on here into. So where this all started was Billie Eilish is performing a series of her concerts leading up to a lot of her big festival shows, including at Coachella. And there was a fan that was at the show at Atlanta's State Farm Arena. And this fan was struggling for their inhaler, apparently. And so Eilish was able to stop the show, assure attendees in the venue that things were like going okay, got security, make sure that they got an inhaler to the fan in distress. And she said in the crowd, basically, or Billie Eilish said on the stage, "We're taking care of our people, hold on," which got a lot of audience applause and things like that. Because in the wake of the Travis Scott incident, where there are questions as to whether Travis Scott as an artist did as much as he should have in making sure and preventing the ultimate loss of life and injury that happened at his Astroworld Festival, there are a lot of artists who are saying, okay, we have to do a better job of making sure our fans are safe at our concerts, at our venues, and things like that. And so just on this Billie Eilish thing, what did you think from this like response? It didn't seem to be like calling out Travis Scott in any way. Felt really
respectful. No, not at all. It's like, hey, we're helping out our humans. Like, that's what it sounds like. It sounds like, hey, like, what I took it as, so it was the person lost their inhaler and was trying to find it on the ground. And if you have an asthma attack, especially in a crowded room and everything, like you can't breathe, your lungs like basically swell up, your throat swells up and you can't breathe. Like, I know plenty of people who use inhalers, especially living by ports and all of that. So it's a very, you know, extremely important thing to get out to somebody who needs it. But the way she put it was like, oh, hey, we care about you. Like, you are us. like you, this is one big family, like all of us together. It's trying to not create distance between like an artist and their fans. It's trying to, you know, kind of create a community. It's kind of the way I interpret it as. So it's not like a, oh, hey, look, I'm better than this artist, or I'm better than Travis Scott, or, you know, whatever, we help our people. No, it's we as like the royal we, the collective we of the people here, like we all help each other, which is nice. Like, it's good to hear that from an artist, you know, someone who is as popular and as big as Billie Eilish doing that. And that's how I took it as that. But apparently yeah, other people didn't know.
Yeah, that's not how Kanye West took it. And so Kanye West said, basically, come on, Billy, we love you. Please apologize to Trav and their and to the families who lost their lives. No one intended this to happen. Trav didn't have any idea of what was happening when he was on stage and was very hurt by what happened. And yes, Trav will be with me at Coachella, but now I need Billy to apologize before I perform. And so Ye is doing all of this. I want things to go my way and people must respect me. And Travis Scott's recently
respect
been helping
Ye.
Yeah, and Ye has recently been on this all my homies fuck with Travis Scott thing, because Travis Scott's been giving him the information to allow him to see his kids, because his wife is currently afraid that Kanye West is going through his most recent episode and could be a danger to said kids. And so
fair point.
Yeah, so here you have Ye, very normal person, very rational reaction, saying I need Billy to apologize before I perform. Are we past
First
the 2 minute
you're
mark?
Like yelling to a 20-year-old when you're like twice her age, dude. Like, that's kind of weird.
Yeah. Second of all, I'm past the 2 minute mark on YouTube. So, nigga, who the fuck you think you are? See, getting in this argument, going with this is maybe a thing between Travis Scott and Billie Eilish. But as we said in the beginning of the video, Billie didn't call out anyone. She wasn't talking about anyone.
She helped somebody get up their shit. Like, my God, it's just, it's unfathomably stupid. Like, how do you create beef out of nothing, out of her trying to help a fan? Literally, like, it could be a case of life or death for somebody with an inhaler. Like, come on now. Stop making it about yourself.
Yeah. Eilish basically responded to the comment on Instagram, because it was an Instagram post, saying, literally never said a thing about Travis, was just helping a fan.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's the thing you have to, Billie Eilish did the thing you have to do here, which is the thing Drake also did, which is when Kanye is coming at you, when he's having one of these episodes, don't attack back, just defend. Just say like, yeah, hey, I did the thing that you all saw me do. You all in the real world saw me do. Kanye's having his reaction. I can't control his reaction. We can't control his reaction. Only Kanye can control his reaction. But here's what I did. Here's what's reality. That's all you can do with it. And anytime you show any legitimate concern for Kanye West, it gets brushed off as this, oh, you're being upset about him. He's not angry. He's not upset. And it's like, okay, I could be the I'm concerned about him media person about Kanye West, or I could be the TMZ, look at what's going on with his relationship version of Kanye West, who
exactly
will be only making his mental health concerns worse, right?
Yeah.
So there's another angle to this that I found was really interesting, because of course this accidentally becomes a Westworld, but Ye and his continual, you know, request for attention during his episode, you know, social meltdown, he says that Ye said that because of Cudi's ongoing friendship, relationship or whatever with, you know, that guy, of course, he's referencing Pete Davidson, Kid Cudi would no longer be on Donda 2, an album which I don't believe exists and I don't believe is coming out this month. But, and if it is, it's going to be even more rushed and sad sounding than the previous album. But
agreed.
Kid Cudi is, and this has to be, can't be understated, because Kid Cudi is one of the first generation of these artists who was like, Kanye West inspired me. I want to like take what he did and like do it in my own way and put it to another level. So Cudi looks up to Kanye West. But after this point, it was ridiculous, because Ye was like, you know who, referring to Pete Davidson, and said, we all speak in Billie language now, which is like a weird random shot to Billie Eilish. And it doesn't really make a lot of sense either.
This,
but Cudi
commented
on the post saying, too bad I don't want to be on your album, you fucking dinosaur. And all I did was flashback back to the photo of the what Kardashian West family photo of the family as the Flintstones, where Kanye was actually the dinosaur. He was Dino. That's all I thought of in my brain when I saw that.
But hilarious.
Cuddy then took it to Twitter and said, "We talked weeks ago about this. You're whack for flipping the script and posting this lie just for a look on the internet. You ain't no friend, bye." So what this implies is that, okay, listen, Donda 2, maybe it exists, maybe it doesn't. Normal album decisions are being made, and it's like, hey, Cuddy, you're not on the album. Maybe we'll put you on the deluxe or whatever. We still love you, still love the music. And that was supposed to be like the story, most likely, at least from what I can speculate from this tweet. But apparently, according to what Kid Cudi's saying, Ye made it about Billie Eilish and Pete Davidson and Kim Kardashian and his ongoing public meltdown about his ongoing divorce, instead of just telling the truth and saying, hey, this Kid Cudi's not on the album anymore. Like, hey, just don't mention it at all. So, yeah. Again, everyone in the music industry, thankfully, they're not taking the bait. They're just expressing the honest truth of what's happening. And they're saying, listen, here's the truth of what happened. I wish Kanye West well, because he's not doing great, honestly.
He's not. And like, this is something that we always say, like, this happens when you surround yourself with yes men and you don't get help when you really need it. And it's sad to see that. And like, I feel bad for Kid Cudi in a way, because, you know, looking up to somebody, you know, a musical artist and whatnot that you inspires you and, you know, excites you to become somebody who you end up becoming. And then you do the project with Kids See Ghosts a few years ago and all of that. And you have all these interactions and all that. And now it's just melting down because somebody's literally having a meltdown. It's no fault of your own. Yeah. I feel bad for Cudi that way. And Kanye's just really going off the deep end now.
Yeah. That's pretty much all I can say on that.
Yeah.
Moving on, the world's worst rapper of all time, YB definitely better, has YB been arrested in a $4.5 billion crypto scheme. So this woman's named Heather Morgan. She has a rap name, Razzle Khan, apparently. And it's literally the kind of stuff where like everyone involved making... This is a Kendall Roy affair, where like Kendall Roy is the rich asshole and everyone around him doesn't want to do this. And everyone around him is trying to tell him, this is only making you look worse. You don't want to do this. Nevertheless, she's going ahead anyways. And so there was this...
Damn it, Kendall.
Yeah, she was being basically charged for stealing $4.5 billion in cryptocurrency, according to a federal criminal complaint. And it's unclear when the pair began dating, but they got engaged and got married in 2019. And Razzle Khan, like all of these completely unbearable, disgusting crypto jerks, was like, I'm like Genghis Khan with more pizzazz. Okay. She's using all of those funds to make terrible rap music. I'll like include a little bit of it on the side here.
Motherfucking crocodile of Wall Street. Silver on my fingers and boots on my feet. Always be a goat, not a goddamn sheep. Email me. Fuck your message at the beep. Beep, 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 beep. Razzle Khan's the name, that hot grandma. You really wanna bang. Always run the guilt game ever since I was 15. I'm many things. A rapper, an economist, a journalist, a writer, a CEO, and a dirty, 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 dirty hoe. Better than most writers, creepier than most girls, weirder than most rappers, but I still rock pearls. Razzle Khan, the Versace better win.
But like,
pretty brutal.
It's so offbeat, it's so off kilter. Like, when it sucks because there are white women who legitimately try to rap. Like, Iggy Azalea is shaking her head somewhere in Australia right now. Is going, like, real upset about this. Just absolute slander. Yeah, it's... I'm just glad these crypto people are getting got.
So, basically what happened... Yeah, they like hacked into a virtual exchange in 2016. And they made off with about almost 120,000 Bitcoin. Which is worth, you know, billions of dollars. So they Lehman Brothers their way into there.
The old Lehman Marcus.
On here. The only the old Bear Stearns, baby. The whole crypto people want to piss me off. So I don't feel like dealing with that right now.
I'm going to be going into crypto during the month of March on Power Report. So folks should check that out. That'll be fun.
I definitely want to be on there because I just want to rail against it and how crazy these people are in the scam economy. But, you know, more on that in a month.
Yeah, yes, more on that in a month for sure. I'm not going to give too much away yet. But we will move on to our next album of the day. We have The Dream by Alt-J. 12 songs, 49 minutes long. And Alt-J really made a name for themselves in the kind of dreamy indie alternative space in the early 2000s with their really kind of blowaway album, An Awesome Wave, I want to say. You had songs like Breeze Blocks, Tessellate, like all those different things that made them just like staples in that early part of the 2010s. But however, times change, values don't. And they haven't really gotten that same level of mainstream acclaim since then after releasing a couple of albums since then.
Yep.
I want to say we reviewed Relaxer in 2017, like one of our really early reviews.
I believe we did. Yes.
Yeah. And it was an album with very long songs, I remember. Yeah, because it's 40 minutes long, but 8 songs. And the thing with Alt-J, and Papa's about to go in again, is that there are rarely times on this podcast where I am a very good faith reviewer, and I've talked about how good faith a reviewer I am. I try to listen to every album twice. I had to stop because it bored me. Like, fundamentally, yeah. I'm like, I'm not listening to this. Like, I am like, you don't understand, Alt-J. I've changed since 2012. I am running missions. I am killing ops. I am securing the bag. I don't have time to sleep right now. I don't have time to listen to this shit.
The thing is, you can make a, you know, a slower record, a record like a dreamy, ethereal record. We have reviewed plenty on this podcast. My favorite band is, well, my favorite band is Sigur Rós. That's literally all they do. You can do it, but you have to do it in a way that the song structure has a meaning to it. Like with me, example, the opening track, Bane, it's just, it's really slow and it has no meaning to it. Flooded by the scissor of the bubbles on the tongue. 66 abs underwater somersault. Vocal cord inside of a screaming for the rules don't apply to you, cause you got the buzz. 66 abs underwater somersault. So it sets you off on kind of a wrong foot in that way, because like the first about 3 minutes or so, it's just, you have like some slow piano ballads here or there. You have like a slow build up, but there's no real structure on that that keeps you engaged, is what I'd say.
Yeah. And that's why I kind of fell through the whole thing. I tried to listen to this album, like I said, twice, maybe almost 3 times, because I was just like so confused. Like, I remember listening to Hippocampus and Snot this week, but Alt-J just kept being this blur. And so I'd like focus as much as I could, tried to listen to it.
Yep.
And like, I think I listened to You and Me and I was like, okay, I kind of get what they're going for here. Good that you put your like best foot second, so to speak. If anything, it had almost this it had this Dandy Warhols kind of chord progression. This thing that Dandy Warhols does in all their songs, like dun 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 dun.
Yeah,
it's just a way of completing that sequence, and it's all perfectly fine and good. But you would need an album to stay around that pace, a little bit slower and a little bit faster, in order to complete it. Maybe it does that during the last, you know, song 7 and below, but I didn't make it past any time. Yeah, I didn't make it past either time. I got to like Happier When You're Gone or The Actor. Yeah, I would always get through songs 4, 5, and 6, Happier When You're Gone, The Actor, and Get Better. And I'd just be like, this has just been like a 15-minute slog of like, I don't retain or remember things from these songs. Like, and I know there's like a lot of emotion being poured into these things. It sucks, but the packaging sucks even more than the fact that it's being lost.
Yeah, I mean, granted, somebody who listens to slower music, like I love Post-rock, I love, you know, Cigarettes and a bunch of these other bands, like even some early Doves work and whatnot. They could be slower. Some Radiohead could be really ethereal and kind of airy and spacey in that way. You can get that with some earlier Spoon records, which more on that later, because there's going to be Spoon did release an album this week, but had to push that back because there's just too much being released. But within those records, you can do it where you can make it engaging within doing slower tracks. And you can make those tracks long as hell, but they're very, very engaging because the musicality of the production, everything, you know, it kind of wraps around a central point. It wraps around something that you that is engaging. With this, there's no real point to the dream. Like, there's nothing where it wants you to keep you engaged in that way. Everything is just, it kind of flutters out and spirals out. And I've listened to this twice through because I wanted to give it a second chance on that, because I first listened through, you had a couple decent songs. You had You and Me, you had Chicago, towards the end of the album, you had Losing My Mind, like the second half of Losing My Mind, I actually really like. I thought that was like, oh wow, that's actually like a good song and like a really good idea. The way the drums are kind of reminds me of some early Beach House and stuff with that. But with that, it's like the rest of it is just nothingness. It's nothing that's engaging to anybody who isn't like a fan of it necessarily. But with any normal person who doesn't have, you know, bias to the style of music, you're not going to enjoy it. And so then I was very disappointed in. I wanted more from it. And yeah, I understand why you struggled to listen to it, because that second listen through, I sat and really went through it, and I was like, wow, this is, especially in the middle part of the record, it gets pretty bland. But there's always like little flutters of hope here or there. You have Losing My Mind, in the middle you have Chicago, which I do like. But again, like with those things, like you have these interesting like spoken word ideas and other things which they can kind of add on to it, but they leave it like at such a flat level that's it. It's just flat. That's if you're drinking, you know, a flat ginger ale. You're like, I don't even want to drink this. I'm going to throw this down the drain. That's what it's like. Like, unfortunate.
Yeah. Arbitrary scale this week. We do arbitrary scales every week on Audio Face because our review is our review. And so rather than give you a ranking system, let's throw in something random. This week we're doing bowling alleys in honor of DaBaby's baby mama's brother. And try saying that 5 times fast. And I'm going to give this one of those bowling simulators that you play that's virtual where like the pins aren't even real.
Wii?
Yeah.
Is Wii bowling? This for me is, you go to an arcade and it's like arcade bowling. Like
what I was saying originally.
It's not skee ball, but it's one of those artificial ones where you have like an artificial ball and it's like half broken because some fucking asshole kid threw it through the screen and broke it like 10 years ago and they never fixed it because it's an arcade and who gives a fuck? It's like that.
It's Chuck E. Cheese arcade bowling.
Chuck E. Cheese scares me.
Yeah.
Traumatized by Chuck E. Cheese.
It's me, Charles Cheese. Come inside.
Hey, man. Let's not but say we did.
Moving on. Snoop Dogg has come full circle, and he's going to be releasing an album soon. And I think it's called like Back on Death Row or something like that. But one thing that makes it great is that he is acquiring Death Row Records, his original record label. Hi, Blurry Sean. And apparently he is... We'll figure that out later. But he debuted on Doggy Style in 1993. But since then, of course, he's had a bunch of different record releases, a whole different spanning career, more or less. And he's gotten to do a whole like variety of different things in his career. But nevertheless, he believes that, yeah, Back on Death Row, which will be releasing, apparently already released, actually, just this past Sunday. But, there you are again. when Snoop Dogg left Death Row in 1998, he explained, there was nothing over there. Suge Knight was in jail. Tupac was dead. Dr. Dre left. It's telling me either I'm going to be dead or in jail or I'm going to be nothing. So that's a lot of why Snoop Dogg left. But yeah, like we said, Snoop Dogg's entire trajectory of his career has changed. He now does fake weed ads with Bic lighters and Martha Stewart. What a time to be alive. And so, you know, I think this is a nice, interesting full circle thing for him.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's just the irony of it all, right? Of all the stuff that happened between him and Death Row Records. I mean, all the stuff with the gangster rap in the 90s, you had Eazy-E saying, you know, motherfuck Death Row. Here comes my left blow. You have this so much history within there that it's kind of cool to see go for a circle. It'll be interesting to see what happens and to see what he does with Death Row, right? Like you have a lot of interesting rap record labels right now that are kind of in this limbo situation of artists leaving them, artists coming and trying to see how they adapt to an ever-changing world, adapt to newer artists coming onto their record labels and stuff. So but we'll see what happens. We'll see if it's a good thing for them or something where there's just, it's a Hail Mary to see what happens. And yeah, you report, you decide.
Yeah. While this is all happening, there was a lawsuit by a Jane Doe, essentially, that alleges in 2013 that the rapper, along with Snoop's longtime associate, Bishop Magic Juan, basically sexually coerced, harassed, and assaulted this woman after attending a Snoop concert in Anaheim, California in 2013, basically saying that the associate offered to take her home, assaulted her there, and then brought her to a place where Snoop Dogg was shooting for potential career opportunity, and then alleging that Snoop Dogg then sexually assaulted her there in a bathroom. It's kind of in one of those situations where, like, the lawsuit exists and Snoop Dogg is responding saying that this is basically just a gold, basically that she's a gold digger, more or less, saying that it's gold digger season is here to be careful and keep your circle small. So it's a weird situation because a lot of times it's a lot easier to kind of say there's a history or a pattern of a record with this person, like with the Marilyn Manson stuff that's ongoing, for example.
Yeah.
Or the R. Kelly stuff. There's a pattern, there's a history, there's a record. You've gotten some stuff with Snoop Dogg here and there. I mean, he's a well-known Crip, and like there's a lot of like things here and there related to that. But you know, like sexual assault isn't one of those things you've seen a lot, so to speak. So nevertheless, you just like see where the case sort of goes through. Yeah. And we'll see the rises from there, because right now it's sort of like a he said, she said kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then this was an interesting one. Steve Albini, who is a famously opinionated producer from Chicago, has been around the music industry for a long time, has strong opinions on two different groups of musical fans, so to speak. And he says in a tweet, yes, I'm saying the Juggalos are good. A non-judgmental, inclusive community for people on the fringe, built on a beautiful communion they call family. They remind me of a punk queer chosen families, and I love them. I haven't heard much of the music. It's atrocious. Who cares? And he's comparing this compared to Deadheads, essentially.
I don't know what you mean by inclusive. Because they are known like extreme agitators and like homophobes and racists in there and stuff, and even like the Juggalos and stuff, like they are like St. Clown Posse, they even go back to like their older music and are like, we probably shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, he was calling himself a fool. This is absolutely model owning your shit behavior. And if a goddamn fucking Juggalo can manage it, a 9-figure podcaster can step up without whining. Because Albini was talking, this is all in the context of all the Joe Rogan discourse that's going on. And so it's like, if Juggalos or Deadheads can make up for, you know, past remarks and things like that, or Juggalos can, then maybe Joe Rogan can. But I think this is an interesting angle, because I think I'm not sure. In a lot of these musical communities, especially these like Gen X, like rocker musical communities, like I've talked to a lot of these people and they just seem like generally regular people. Like you rarely ever get like the Ted Nugent types. They're just like, yeah, I'm a music fan. I like music. I don't really hate people. They're fairly progressive and leftist, actually. So you could like, there's also within these groups, like all the time, and whenever you get these counterculture groups, people who try to infiltrate them and spread their extreme ideologies. So you had alleged members of the Insane Clown Posse have like started turning their ire towards racists and pedophiles, as mentioned in this article. Like, so they're actually like taking a stance against this type of stuff, not just within their communities, but outside of it. Yeah. And so all you see is people who are like messed up in all this like clown gear and like wild makeup and stuff. Yep. But they're like, on the one hand, yeah, going against racism and child pedophilia, but then like the child pedophilia stuff sometimes goes down QAnon rabbit holes, and there you get the right winger stuff. So I think it's an interesting conversation, Juggalos versus Deadheads, which one's more woke, and not a conversation I expected to have in 2022, but
we are.
Yes. And then, because there is more Joe Rogan discourse, but I do love anyone. The only reason I'm talking about this is because Trevor Noah gets dunked on, and I love it. So
the more dunking on Trevor Noah there is, the better for the world.
There isn't enough of it, and there needs to be more. It's fun for the whole family. So,
Six flags more fun.
Yeah. So, Disturbed frontman David Drayman, great name, called out Daily Show host Trevor Noah over his takedown of Joe Rogan. So, Trevor Noah was saying that Rogan's use of the N-word was wrong, and basically saying that. So Noah said, if there's ever a video of you saying the N-word that many times, you better pray one of two things. Either you're a black person or you're a dead man from history. Then the worst thing they can do to you is take your statue down and move it to a museum. As bad as it was to see Joe Rogan dropping the N-word like he bought in bulk at Costco, an even worse part of the video was Joe Rogan told a movie about going to, just a story about going to see a movie in a black neighborhood. And that's where the Planet of the Apes quote comes from.
Yeah.
And you know, that's a great quote that almost assuredly someone in the Comedy Central writing staff wrote for him. But like, Drayman, who was Jewish, came out and said, "You're a hypocritical, self-righteous, pathetic man, Trevor Noah." And included a written compilation of Noah's past anti-Semitic jokes, including one that read, quote, "Almost bumped a Jewish kid crossing the road. He didn't look before crossing, but I still would have felt so bad in my German car." Or,
damn.
Quote, originally when men proposed, they went down on one knee. So if the woman said no, they were in perfect uppercut position. So these are jokes that Trevor Noah made. And then Trevor Noah is starting to get on Joe Rogan on this like wokeness sort of thing, which is why if you watch Power Report, you will see an critique of Joe Rogan and a critique of people who defend Joe Rogan on his racist stance that's actually substantive and justifiable. Because if you're going to say, oh, Joe Rogan is a racist for saying these things, it's not going to work because comedians dabble in topics that are, you know, uncouth and edgy all the time, all right? You need to point at what does the racism look like as far as action? What is Joe Rogan doing in actions that are racist? It's a harder argument to make, but it can be made. But Trevor Noah and that like, not to get into a PowerPoint rant here, are too, their comedy is too watered down. It's not smart. It's not intelligent. It's made to make a sort of like low operating brain function political mind like laugh and be funny and find it humorous. But in reality, it's just the most surface level political criticism that doesn't get at the actual issues of this country, which is why there are a million other ways, better ways to get politics, and PowerPoint is one of them.
Yep. It's just, yeah. The more these people aren't even fun. Like, I've never found Trevor Noah to be entertaining at all or whatnot. So the more dunking on him, the better. And people like that who don't have, you know, anything. Oh, Lord, my camera again. Rip. Anything that, like, someone who doesn't have something very constructive to say about it, more just outrage, you're not going to have any, like, utter change in that.
Yeah. it's you have to be careful with how you're creating your rhetoric and actually be more thoughtful of the audience of your argument. And that's something that doing a daily 30-minute talk show doesn't allow you to do. So we'll move on from that and go to our last album of the week, which is Hippocampus's LP3, 10 songs, 33 minutes long. We are really stretching the definitions of an LP here, but
we really are now.
Yeah, I think we may have to revisit my what is a drop conversation and our state of music conversation this year, because no one's listening to Audio Face on that one. But on for LP3, Hippocampus had kind of, this is their third LP, and they've made a lot of different somehow smaller releases and drops and projects over the past couple years since they've been out. They kind of blew up on the scene. I want to say 2017 is the first time I heard about them, and people were like,
I heard about them a little bit earlier. I think The Sound South in 2015 was the first song I heard, but that's more of I'm really in indie circles.
Yeah,
I would say they've been around for a little bit.
Definitely. They've been around and they've gotten a lot of acclaim for their ability to, you know, take indie, which is such a nebulous phrase now. That's definitely going to be part of the state of music conversation as well. But they've been able to take indie and, you know, bend it in a number of different ways, make a lot of interesting sounds, push that music into interesting places for themselves, and, you know, really take grasp that genre on their own. LP3 is their next effort into that. And I know it was a nice ride. It's a nice 30-minute little, you know, piece of music project. There's certain parts of it, especially in the middle, where I thought it was going to lose me. But overall, around the end, it came together for me. And I came away from the project positively, although maybe not, like, wowed and amazed.
100% agree. So Hippocampus, like, their sound kind of before, right? You have Landmark in 17, which is a pretty big, like, indie record, like that solid, you know, mid 2010s, late 2010s indie sound, which we've, you know, a lot of people have come to like. For me, it really, you know, states my the college years. So it's a sound I like. You have, you know, Way It Goes, South, you have Western Kids, a bunch of songs that are like pretty good from them before. And within that, they're last record, which was Bambi, which came out in 2018, I thought was okay, but nothing really hit from there. Then they had some like demos and other things that they released, but this is, you know, their real most recent project. And within there, I think it's a step in the right direction. You know, a lot of these indie bands, whatnot, they can kind of get stuck in a specific sound, and it's really hard for them to move on over. You have your exceptions, like, you know, Dive, I think, is a prime example of someone who has always evolved their sound. I think with LP3, Hippocampus, they're slowly starting to evolve their sound. Instead of getting stuck into one thing of the late 2010s, they're now trying to push it forward and see kind of where they're belonging in this kind of circle of indie folks. Like, where exactly do they want to be? Where do they want to be eventually? So there are some things I think that hit in here. I think there's some things that I really did not like, but I, you know, commend them for trying. Example, Too Young to Die, the opening track, I absolutely hate it. I thought it was I listened to like the opening track. I don't like it. I hate the drums. I just, the way it's produced. Everyone takes what they can handle. Everyone thinks that they're too young to die. Don't like the industrial sound that they tried to do on that track. It just, they don't make it that well. Like, you know, some folks can make industrial sound great, but that is not the way to do it. But then after that, you have Blue It's, Ashtray, Bane. Those are fantastic. I think those are actually pretty good tracks. They grew on me at first. When I listened to it, I just didn't really like it. But I think, you know, he gets Ashtray, Bane Bane. Those are tracks that I actually thoroughly enjoy. And that's to me was like, okay, cool. They're expanding onto their sound. They're adding more pop elements into it and a little bit more electronic influences, industrial influences, and other things that they've had, you know. But within there, those things are starting to stick a little bit more. And then towards the middle and end of the album, you definitely get a bit better. And which is interesting with some of these albums this year, you know, even though 2022 is so relatively early, we're getting albums where the ending, like the last couple songs, are starting to be pretty good. Where, you know, last year, the past couple years, we've had albums that have just been extremely top heavy. To me, a lot of these we're getting have been more bottom heavy, which can be good and can be bad, depending. And I think with this album, because it's, you know, pretty short, I think it's good for it to be bottom heavy in that way.
Yeah, I know with 2020, we had a ton of, like, we had a best album enders category. It was looking really good. And then we did the 2020, yeah, like you said, in 2021, the albums seemed like, yeah, top heavy, bottom
super
heavy albums.
Top heavy.
I think when you start this album, Too Young to Die is maybe a little bit too little. Like, this trying to do that, like, glitch synth pop thing at the end that sometimes even the 1975 does, but I think they executed a lot better, whereas this just seems kind of like muddled and messy. Bluets was almost like too much. It's going like way too fast and saying at you. Bang Bang, I felt like was that nice balance right there in the middle between them. And yeah, you go through the middle of the album where it started to lose me, I felt, was Ride or Die, Scorpio, even
Ride or Die, like,
I thought the songs were okay, but I felt like there's almost, the second album, Identity Crisis, that usually bands get, I almost feel a little bit in here because you're trying a lot of things, and true, you have 33 minutes, and so you don't have a lot of time to try a lot of different things. Could just made a longer album. But I think I feel like they're, even though you have indie, you have so many different, it's such a broad genre.
You have
so many
different
things
sounds
you can pull from. At a certain point, especially when you have your LP3, there should be a little more cohesion that I'm not getting from this record. It feels like,
100%.
It feels like by the song 5, 6, or 7, I shouldn't be going, oh, look at these sounds that are going all over the place. I should feel like, oh, I'm in the midst of this album. This album has a memorable feeling. I feel what it's like to be in this album. Yep. And songs 5, 6, or 7, maybe they're not the most memorable, but they make me feel like I'm in this album because of it. So, unfortunately, I don't get that from here, but I felt like around Listerine and songs like Boys and Understand felt like I ended it okay enough for me to go, okay, this wasn't like a wash album. This was pretty solid.
No, yeah. Like I think Boys is a fantastic track towards the end of it, and that's to me where it's like, cool, that song is a perfect encapsulation of them evolving their sound. It still like stays true to themselves as artists, stays true to them as, oh, hey, like we come from that style of indie in the late 2010s, but this is what that sounds modernized. It's still, you can still make stuff like that. I mean, example, you got B2B, Phoebe Bridgers, a couple of the women indie artists who are, you know, pushing their ones further forward. And with that gave me hope with them. Like, okay, cool. They're starting to figure it out. But this album is just one of those albums where it's, you know, it might take a little bit for me to get into it, maybe even a year or 2 years to really appreciate it for what it is. But it's a step in the right direction for them, and I commend them for trying something different. And I hope that they take this as like, okay, hey, some of these things just didn't mix, but some of these things are fantastic, and let's now choose those things and now move forward with them and try to, you know, encapsulate those and take that to the next level, which I think they can do.
Totally. They've got the right stuff there. They just have to own it on what is right and decide on that, which is a common thing that a lot of bands, great bands even, do. So wish them well on that. Arbitrary scale this week, because we do arbitrary scales every time on Audioface, because our review is our review, and ranking systems don't matter, but this ranking system is kind of fun. It's bowling alleys, and I'm going to give this the old Rossmore Bowl.
Rossmore Bowl? That's good.
Yeah, it doesn't exist anymore. Now it's a shopping center, because no one does shopping centers, no one does bowling alleys anymore, but you know what? This is the Roaring 20s. We're just going to do some random old shit anymore just for fun. We're bringing back bowling alleys.
This is a solid Westminster Lanes. I think it still exists. Last time I went there was pre-pandemic, so I don't know if it still exists post-pandemic, but, you know, like, they got decent lanes. You could always get a time there. It's got decent balls, pause. And, you know, it gets the job done. But it's rather expensive.
Yeah. There's so many good bowling alleys around LA that I wanted to give my love out to, but there's no albums that cut it. Like, I would give my love out to Shadow Lanes.
Okay. I wanted to do the young Canoga Park Bowl, but nobody deserved the Canoga Park today.
Yeah. And there's nothing like as mediocrely average as Cal Bowl in Lakewood. It's just like nothing. Just like if we had reviewed Gunna, that would have been Cal Bowl.
What is what's the Lakewood Mall one? Is that like Lane One or something?
Oh, Round One. Oh, that's one. A chain. That's a chain.
That's a chain. Oh shit! I didn't realize it's a chain. That's future. Hilarious. It's future ones. We gotta have chain bowling alleys.
Anyways, quick hits. The Winter Olympics. Anyone remember those? If you're in America, no, you don't. But anyways, Team USA helped to win a silver medal with a little bit of help from our French robot friends, Daft Punk. They did a routine partially to Contact, and then did a rest of their routine mixing through a number of other different RAM tracks, including Within and Touch. And
those are like my it was so cool when I watched that, because those ones I think are underappreciated. Like, Contact is such an underappreciated song. Touch is my favorite RAM track. It's unbelievably good. And it's just the whole routine, everything going along with it. It was incredible. Art in its best form.
Yeah. One of the commentators said, I don't know if you'll get a better example of why these two are one of the best in the world than this lift right here. That commentator was also American, and they got silver. And we all just say, second place is first loser. And I'm just kidding. It's great.
You're not a Russian one who shouldn't be competing at the Olympics, but whatever. But, you know, they might get some doping in them.
No, a Russian winner just means you pass the drug test. And then lastly, rest in peace to Syl Johnson, an absolutely famous soul singer who, in addition to like having a wonderful soul career, just kept getting sampled by rappers from Public Enemy to Wu-Tang to Jay-Z to Kanye West. Like, he was just kind of everywhere. One of his songs, Different Strokes, became one of the most sampled songs in hip-hop history. Another one, Is It Because I'm Black, which is just fun to play during Black History Month and during the Uncle Ruckus reality show episode of The Boondocks, is great. And I'll be doing that as the outro for this one here, for this episode. But there's so many different artists that he had worked on, or different songs. So Public Enemy's song Fight the Power, Wu-Tang Clan, Shame on a Nigga, Eric B and Rakim's I Know You Got Soul, Kanye West the Joy, De La Soul's The Magic Number. Like, this song has gone up and down the sample list here and there. And what was interesting is that this was a very musical family as well. You had his brother Jimmy Johnson, who passed away just days earlier. And so you have a musical family who lost two of their greats. And while Jimmy Johnson definitely had like a little bit less of a musical career than Syl Johnson, they both made names for themselves in soul and actual rhythm and blues back in the 60s and 70s. So shout out to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. This has been Audio Face. This is a monster episode. This is quite a big boy.
It is. I did not expect it to be like this.
I didn't, but, you know, we had a lot of news to go through this week, and it was quite one. We have a lot of stuff coming up throughout the rest of February, including our State of Music conversation, which we'll be posting probably the first week of March. Members will get that first, so make sure you're subscribed at join.syndicate23.co to get all of that cool member stuff. Find Audio Face Pod on Twitter and Instagram at Audio Face Pod. Not Faudio Face Pod. Audio Face Pod. YouTube.com/AudioFacePod. AudioFacePod is where you can find the YouTube channel. Make sure you're subscribed to us so you don't miss any of the videos that were there. And yeah, Sean can be found on Twitter and Instagram at SW Suarez. I can be found on Twitter at Dan from the Web and on Instagram and TikTok at Dan from the Internet. We will talk to you on the next episode, 220. Woo! Thank you, Sean, for joining me on this one. Cheers.
Anytime. Bye.